Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to 100 Words or Less with Ray Harkins.
Hello, everybody out there in the podcast listening universe. Thank you for downloading this podcast and putting it in your ear holes. And I know that sounds like a very trite and real basic thing to say, but I really do appreciate you taking the time with this show, taking the time with these guests, and listening to what they have to say, because I think it's important, and I'm glad you think it's important. Today, we've got Dale Crover from the Melvins on. He is a man of many talents, has played in a lot of different bands, but the Melvins is his anchor and the one he's been playing with for quite some time, pretty much since the inception. Not pretty much, since the inception. But Dale and I had a great chat. The only thing I would like to note is that we ran into some technology barriers in regards to the internet just totally crapping out on us on more than one occasion, and it was frustrating, but we got through it. We actually had to switch over to the phone, which you'll notice in the last about 7 minutes of the conversation. Nothing that is like unlistenable, but I just want you to know that that it switches at a certain point, because I just wanted to ask these last few questions and we wanted to push through it. So that is what we did. You'll also notice at the top of the show, we have a new theme song. I am going to be using that from here on out. It is written by my friend Eugene, who does incredible music. If you are interested in what he has going on, you can just email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com, and I will pull some connective tissue together. But he does a lot of great work, and he has done a lot of neat things for this show. So I really appreciate him and contributing song-wise to this, because it's an original composition. That's how cool this podcast is. But you can also leave a review on Apple Podcasts. I know I say that almost every week, but it is meaningful. It gives legitimacy to this show, and it makes other people discover it, and that is an important thing. And also tell your friends. Tell anybody who should be listening to this show that they need to, download it. Try out an episode or two, because I've got like 400 some of these things, so please do that. And let's dive into the conversation with Dale, and I will talk to you at the end of the episode for who is coming up next week.
I first interacted with the Melvins in general, just as a punk and hardcore kid growing up in the 90s, and kind of understanding where the Melvins sat in context of just kind of lineage of punk and hardcore and everything like that. And I'm sure it's interesting now, existing for as long as you have in the independent music scene, there are so many jumping off points for people to find out about, what you do as a musician, where it's like, oh yeah, I didn't even know he played in the Melvins because I just really like Off, or, that's maybe not the best example, but you get what I'm saying.
Sure. There might be some people like that, but the thing is, I don't consider us to be like some oldies band.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
But you know what I mean? It's like somehow we've managed to stay current, and even though we have the history that we do, we're not considered like, 90s retro band or whatever, Thank God. But then again, maybe that would have gotten us, maybe that would get us some more like state fair gigs,
Oh, for sure, dude. You can do the, sit down dinner theater playing in front of 500 people or whatever.
I hear those pay well, It's like one ticket. You sell one ticket.
That's all you need, man.
Free show.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You're getting the wine and dinner, but then a band happens to be playing for free.
Right. No, we've never quite had those offers though. Well, in some ways, but I mean,
right.
They're few and far between and always something kind of weird and bizarre.
Sure.
But, managed to still play a lot of the same places we've been playing for a long time. And, because we've got, good relationships with people all across the country, stuff like that.
Right. So. Exactly. Yeah. You've traveled in the same circles and, people obviously know your context and where you're coming from. But I guess the point I was trying to arrive at was the notion that people can get into you at any time. A 13-year-old kid now can just get into the most recent release and then be like, oh, this is interesting, this acoustic thing. And, understand so much more about the band. I presume it's gratifying for you to be able to, like you said, obviously not just be this quote unquote retro act, but then still be able to be accessible to a wide range of people. I mean, not mainstream, obviously, but yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Seems that we always get a sort of a new audience every year, or at least every couple of years, it seems like it changes over. But, we understand that because you get to a certain age and you don't really go out and watch music that much anymore. Or go to a bar when you're like in your 50s that much anymore or anything like that. So we've managed to have this audience that stayed roughly the same age. So, and I always quote Dazed and Confused with what's his name's character?
Matthew McConaughey's character, yeah.
Yeah,
where you're
exactly.
Going. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. They say the same age. I just keep getting older.
I keep getting older, and they stay the same age.
Right.
Which is creepy now, but
yes, in the context used it in the movie, that was not cool. But yes, for you guys, it's definitely cool. And I'm sure that kind of having that, like you said, sort of generational turnover. And when I say generation, like I honestly, personally, in independent music, measure it every like 4 to 5 years, just because.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
It's like every high school year, it's like, oh, once a freshman graduates, their senior year, like that kind of the new leaf gets turned over. I would really define that for you guys as well, like in the early 2000s, where a lot of people that, were very and are still very entrenched in the whatever metal punk hardcore world. And you guys were deemed as, very influential from bands like, Isis and all of that. Like once that started, the Hyderhead record scene started to, really take hold. I think that was a real interesting inflection point for you guys to all of a sudden be playing in front of, not like extremely younger people, but people who are more open to, your creative pursuits.
Yeah, somehow we've crossed genres. We've gone, grunge. We can go the stoner metal route, and then with like the bands you're just mentioning, it's like art metal, or sludge or whatever. There's quite a crossover,
right,
of people that we appeal to, but not all those people. I mean, we're kind of like too heavy for like alternative people and maybe too weird and nerdy for super extreme metal people, but somehow we meet all the weirdos in the middle.
Right. It's like you're collecting from each disparate scene and being like, oh, we'll take 5% here, 7% here. Not like that's a strategy, but yeah.
No, it just happened that way.
Yeah, exactly. I'll pull in some other strings in regards to that a little bit later, but I know you were born and raised and obviously in the Aberdeen area, like everybody, you know, has mentioned in every interview ever. But from what I can understand in general about the time and the place that you came up in, Aberdeen was this, you know, suburb enclave, but at the same time, there was a lot of, I guess, progressive thought and a lot of more interesting things happening there per se. And not so much from like a cultural perspective, but just like, oh yeah, sort of, you know, maybe ex hippies or that sort of lifestyle. Is that a correct representation or am I completely off?
Nah, there wasn't much going on there at all. I mean, as far as
dead.
We were definitely the few of us that we were certainly outsiders compared to anything else that was going on there. I mean, there was really no music scene going on there besides like a few high school style cover bands, which I was guilty of being in one until I joined the Melvins. Other than, you know, well, the freakiness of there's being like a few bands that actually came from there, you know, Metal Church is one of them that were going when I saw the Melvins. And I knew those guys and, you know, saw them play and stuff. Yeah. I mean, there was no place to play. All we did, once I joined the Melvins, all we did was practice all the time because that's all there really was to do. We would practice all the time and play a show maybe once a month, but not in Aberdeen. That would be more like Olympia or Seattle or something like that. So, you know, it was a isolated coastal town in Washington. Closest city would have been, you know, Olympia, you know. But there was actually stuff going on there, you know. The Evergreen College, which was kind of a hippie college, I guess you'd say, you know, alternative college, progressive. So I think because of that, there was definitely like a, you know, underground music scene that Melvins were involved in even before I joined the band, you know, and I knew that. And I thought that was okay. These guys actually play gigs out of town, you know, there's nothing going on here. So good move to get with a band that's playing shows, not in Aberdeen, where there's no place to play, besides a kegger party, maybe, if you're lucky. So, I mean, yeah. So the fact that any bands came from there at all is freakish in and of itself.
Sure. There was such a large mountain to climb, so to speak, just to, you know, get out of the garage.
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess why were your parents there? Like, what were they doing as far as their profession was concerned? Like, why, I guess, you know, set roots in Aberdeen?
Yeah, good question. Why the fuck were they there? No, my dad ended up there sometime after World War II. He was a World War II vet. And after he got out of the war, he got into construction and helped. He did a lot of construction work, did a lot of building bridges in Washington. So I don't know exactly how he ended up in Aberdeen, you know.
Sure.
Because his family's from Oregon, you know. My mom grew up there. And I'm not exactly sure how her parents ended up there. Well, I probably do. I mean, you know. He was in World War II. So I have a grandfather that was in, or sorry, World War I. I have a grandfather who was in World War I and a dad that was in World War II. Isn't that crazy? I'm not that old.
And no, it is crazy to hear that, especially in the context of where your life obviously ended up farthest away from military service at all possible. So
oh yeah, exactly. You know, thank God those guys did it, you know, and I didn't have to do it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Thanks for having me just at the right time. You know, when you didn't have plans to have a kid.
Yep.
Where I would miss any military action.
Right.
That's great.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, and plus the, I guess the desire and the fortitude to be like, oh yes, like, you know, obviously my grandfather was in the military and my father was in the military, so I guess by definition I should at least try this out. But you know, that was clearly never a part of your plan.
Oh no. So you know, my dad had three kids before me and my mom had two. And then they got together and happy accident, me came along. And So, you know, easy for me to like get the band to come over and practice at the house because they'd already done all the parenting that they needed to do. And so it was all cool.
Right. They were like, listen, Dale can fend for himself. Like as long as he's not doing anything, you know, horrifically irresponsible, we'll be okay.
My brothers are like, you got away with murder. We would have never been able to have like band practice at the house, you know?
Dude, that's great. So, I mean, we're all, I guess, five of your step siblings all at the same house, like at the same time as well. So you had to, you know, that many kids running around.
Maybe at first, but no, my older brother and two sisters lived with their mother and my two brothers on my mother's side lived with us. So, and they were still a bit older than me. Like, by the time I was a teenager, they were out of the house and I commanded their bedrooms and one of them was like the jam room.
Perfect.
And one of them was the bedroom.
Right? Yes. Anyway. Of course. Yeah. And so what kind of kid did you find yourself being as you were, you know, kind of going through junior high and high school, like developing an identity? Did you, you know, try sports out? Were you like, all right, I'm going to be, you know, a scholarly guy? Like, what identities were you trying on at that time?
Well, by then, yeah, I was into baseball for sure. And then, yeah, by the time I turned 13, it was starting to get more real, you know, all of a sudden it was like, yeah, you're on a regulation size, a real field, you know, not a little league field. And guys are getting bigger and throwing harder. And I don't know. I was starting to play music then. So it was like, you know, I realized that I was I could be a much better drummer than a baseball player. I tried out football for a little bit, but then that was like pretty serious. You know, kids basically pummeling the shit out of you. And I was like, nah, I don't want to do this.
Right. This is way more intense than baseball. Right.
Well, plus at that age, kids are just, I should speak softly because my son is in seventh grade, but that was the worst fucking year of school ever.
Yes. It is I mean, boys, girls,
it sucks.
Totally. It doesn't matter what you are.
It's one of the worst.
Totally. Because no one has any idea what they're doing, yet everyone's trying to be confident in what they're not.
Well, shit's a little bit better now because they're definitely cracking down on more the bully type of stuff than they used to.
Sure.
Though I know it's still the fucking same. But my junior high at that point was like, you know, and I'm talking about right when I was trying to getting into playing drums, forming opinions about music and all that kind of stuff. It was seventh, eighth, ninth grade. So seventh graders just got, you know, they got the worst shit from all the kids. So his school is 6, 7, 8. So he's at least in the middle.
Right. For sure. And did you care about school? Like, did you get solid enough grades to keep your parents off your back or were they pretty concerned?
Maybe for a little while.
Okay.
Well, I mean, by the time I joined the Melvins, I was 16, going on 17, sophomore and, joined the band summer of 84 when I was going into that grade and we were playing shows on weekdays out of town and not getting back till 3-4 in the morning. And I was starting to miss a lot of school.
And did they grow concerned at that point?
A little bit, but you know, hard to control a teenager. I don't know if you know this, but
yes, I've lived through and heard and seen, especially in our beautiful independent music scene. It's not like a lot of people have you know, with starting bands and touring, it's not like that's something that parents understand.
Right. You know, I think it was probably obvious to my parents even before that that's really what I wanted to do. And I don't know, I must've been pretty good enough for them to go, maybe there's something here. You know, so they let a lot of stuff slide.
We're talking about band merch. We're talking about rockabilia.com. And we're also talking about using this promo code 100 words or less that gets you 10% off your entire order. And why are we talking about these things? It's because band merch is the best. I have hundreds and hundreds of t-shirts, and many of them have ended up being purchased via Rockabilia. I think they are the greatest purveyors of online merchandise,
all officially licensed stuff, high quality, ships to you fast. There is literally no reason you can't go on there and find a bunch of items that you will buy and then just be that much cooler than all your friends. Because after all, isn't that what we're all looking for? Joking aside, Rockabilia is the best. They continue to support this podcast and you will have so much fun going to their website using the promo code 100 words or less. And that gets you 10% off your order. Go there and find all of your favorite band merch today. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
That was a point I was going to bring up a little bit later. The notion that you, obviously, as a drummer, like starting off drums is like easily the most punishing instrument for most parents. So for them to...
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So for them to give you that leeway.
Right, right. So yeah, that was the telltale right there. You know, like, oh, okay. But yeah, the drums got loud pretty damn quick and they were supportive all the way through. So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, that's impressive. Especially like you said too, being able to have, you know, rehearsal at the house and stuff like that. I'm sure there's an element of them being excited that you cared about something, and then clearly underneath that roof they can keep tabs on you.
Totally. They probably figured like, oh, well, at least we know where he is.
Right. As long as he's making noise, it's fine.
Okay, he's here. All right.
Right, right. And so I'm guessing because it's interesting, you live in LA right now, right? You've been in Southern California for a while or no?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to me, you've always struck me as like this very sort of quintessential SoCal dude, as far as like your attitude and not taking things overly seriously.
Dude.
Yeah.
Do I have the accent yet, man?
I think if you were trying to, imitate Spicoli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, yes, I think so.
Yeah, well, no, I was kind of going for more of a Keith Morris thing.
True. That, okay.
Keith, yeah. Like him, or Steve McDonald, you know, I mean, he's got the total Southern Cal accent, you know?
Yes.
That's the accent.
That is the accent. Yes, you are correct. You've spent plenty of time with them, so you have plenty of mm-hmm. of experience to imitate them.
That's a good accent.
Yeah, it is. So I guess, has that always kind of been your personality, as it were? Were you always sort of generally easygoing and kind of displaying that, that vibe? Or is that something that you kind of grew into over time?
I think I've always been pretty easygoing. Yeah, sure. Quiet sometimes, shy, whatever. Used to be somewhat introverted.
Right. Well, you're the drummer, so you obviously have the armor, as it were, to hide behind the kit.
oh yeah, but I can certainly ham it up.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, clearly the Melvins
I'm
are.
I'm right. If you said who's the biggest ham in the Melvins, you know,
there could be some arguments about that. Yeah.
There could be, actually. Yes, there could be.
Right.
But, you know, I'll have a ham contest with anybody on stage, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and honestly, I think that's why people, I mean, in my opinion, why people are attracted to the Melvins in general is, you know, you guys take your art and music seriously as far as the presentation of it is concerned, but you never mm-hmm. take it overly seriously. And people understand that there's this, you know, tongue in cheek firmly implanted in the band. I'm going to guess that's obviously intentional for you guys.
I mean, it's not so much intentional as just though that's the, how that is how we are, you know, forever stuck in eighth grade humor, you know, and that just comes out. Yeah. I mean, well, the name of the band is the Melvins. What the fuck do you expect? You know,
of course. Right.
What do you want? What do you think is going to happen?
Right. You're only going to take this so seriously. Yeah. We're not curing cancer here.
There it is right there. There it is right there.
Sure.
The name of the band is the Melvins.
Did you ever, I guess, kind of mess around with like guitar or anything else before drums took you over? Or was that like day one, that was the thing you wanted to play?
Oh, no, I was a guitar player first.
Okay.
I played guitar starting in eight years old was when I got my first acoustic guitar and started taking lessons at the local Aberdeen library, public library.
That's a weird place to take lessons. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, free lessons. You know, yeah, back when the library used to do stuff that was cool, I guess. They probably still do. But I mean, there's stuff like that around. You know, it was like, yeah, free guitar lessons for a group. And he was teaching basic beginning guitar and you know, learned your A7 chord and then your D and then your G. And then you got a song right there. So,
right. So you,
Hush Little Baby, Kumbaya, Obla Dee Obla Da. That's where I first learned those songs. My library was pretty cool too. They had films and they would show movies. You could actually rent. You could check out the movies and a projector and watch. Like, I remember they would show Yellow Submarine at the library.
Wow.
In the same room where I took the guitar lessons. And I remember we checked out the projector and film one time and watched Harlem Globetrotters films. And then we watched them backwards.
Sure.
They were so funny backwards.
Oh, I can imagine. They're funny forwards and then putting them backwards. Yeah, it's incredible. Totally. Obviously, when you were messing around with the guitar, one led to the other of you being interested in drums because that was easier because there's no notes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I was always interested in them, too. I mean, something I've mentioned before is I remember being 6 years old at Christmas and getting a toy drum set and being super excited, like waking up and seeing it. And I don't think I knew that I was getting something like that. But just being completely blown away and like, oh my God. And, you know, I started playing it right away at 6 a.m. I'm sure my parents were like, oh,
mistake.
Yeah. Christmas is here.
Totally. Whoops.
So, yeah. So I remember always, I'm just being interested in both. I mean, not only toy drums, but toy guitars and stuff like that too. So just being interested in music from a really early age, you know, and watching stuff on TV, like what you could watch would be like, well, the Monkees were the big band. For sure, I'd say it's still one of my favorites. But I would also watch Hee Haw at the same time, or the Lawrence Welk Show, or whatever. Just anything with music didn't matter. But the Monkees were the cooler of the bunch. Probably why I gravitated to rock and roll more, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, anything with music you were consuming. I completely identify with you because I love the Monkees, and that was something that I was watching clearly on reruns on, like, you know, Nickelodeon and Nick at Night and stuff like that. And I remember how like heartbroken I was when I discovered that that wasn't like a quote unquote real band, like they were assembled. And it was just like, oh, it really? Like, but they're really good. Like, what's wrong with that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, those songs are really great. You know, I mean, they had great songwriters and obviously great players or whatever, whoever played on those records. But, you know, at the same time, you know, bands like the Beach Boys were probably using this. They were using the same session musicians that the Monkees were.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they were
Wrecking Crew. Yeah,
exactly.
And you know, had Boyce and Hart writing songs for, you know, Tommy Boyce, Boyce and Hart writing songs for those guys, which I, you know, those guys are great. I love their stuff.
it's just incredible how versatile those players.
Didn't really matter.
Oh, for sure. It was incredible how versatile those players were, because they could just take, it was like, hey, so we're just going to like rip off the Beatles, except obviously make that more for kids and stuff and put them on TV. So can you go ahead and do that? And they're like, sure, no problem. And they just bang out all these hits.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you know, they're almost not really like the Beatles.
Totally.
Song wise. It's like, what, you know, it's really good. I mean, you know, amazing songwriting and all that. And I really like, I mean, though those guys might not have played on everything, I really like Mickey Dolenz in his singing.
Yeah.
He's a great, his vocals are great. In fact, he has a new record out right now. It's Dolenz Sings Nesmith. And so he's doing all these Mike Nesmith songs.
Whoa.
And are you familiar with the Head record?
Yeah.
The soundtrack? Circle Sky. Mike Nesmith song. Mickey does an awesome version of it on his new record. That's like total psychedelic raga with the sitar and tabla, and his vocals are awesome. And
wow,
I haven't checked out the rest of the record yet, but it's pretty cool.
It's
worth checking out for that song alone.
That's really cool. Yeah, I mean, you can stack that up against Last Train to Clarksville, and then you got a great doubleheader. So like you mentioned, you know, once you started to really just completely get immersed within the, you know, independent music scene, as it were, I mean, clearly, like you said, you were reaching out to other cities and, you know, being able to play shows and stuff like that. Was it the attraction of just being able to, you know, create these songs with friends and play them in front of each other that kind of got you keyed into the notion of being in a band? Because I mean, clearly all this stuff, there was no roadmap for you to like be in a band, because you were watching stuff like, you know, Kiss and Iron Maiden, and it was like, we're not going to get there.
Oh no, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be in a band, you know, that's what I wanted to do for sure. And joining these guys was definitely a career move, you know, for me. It was like, okay, these guys are doing shit. Like I said, these guys are playing shows out of town. They've got something going on. Any of these other guys around Aberdeen do not.
Got it. So you felt like it was the on ramp on a very long highway.
Totally. This was an upgrade and a chance to get the hell out of here.
Sure.
And it worked.
Right. Yeah. You know, once you started to play shows and get immersed in that independent music scene, what kind of, I guess, drew you into the idea of like, hey, we're contributing in some way, like we are part of a scene, you know, what was attractive to you about that?
Gosh, I don't know. I never really felt, and I don't think it really felt, I mean, there was already stuff happening in Seattle and Olympia and places like that. It was always kind of a small thing. I felt like I stepped into something that was kind of already happening, you know?
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, us being isolated the way that we were, you know, we never felt, I don't know, we always felt, you know, isolated.
Sure. Well, I mean, obviously a lot of that had to do with your geographic area.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Right.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But I guess just that, that initial feeling of just being able to, you know, play VFW halls and see that you're at least playing with other bands that, you know, maybe didn't suck as bad as the bands you played with, you know, whatever, a year ago or something like that.
Yeah, right. I mean, we didn't have big ambitions at all. I mean, for us, it was like, oh, to play a show and play on stage. That's great. That, you know, that's what we want to do, you know? And then we really wanted to make a record, and that took a while to happen, but you know, finally it did. So, you know, baby steps.
Well, and also it seems like, like you said, the, you know, the ambitions of the band, there were never any, you know, grand plans of putting stuff together, because that was not part of the radar, as it were. And so it seemed always very, and still to this day, and I don't mean this in a disparaging way, but, you know, very hand to mouth, where it's like, oh, what's the next thing that we could do?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Right. I mean, yeah. And certainly it's like that, but I mean, we do like to plan things pretty far in advance, you know? I mean, I don't know. We're a million miles away from those days. So what can I say? Things operate a lot more smoothly nowadays, and there's a lot more advanced planning because we can. And, but at the same time, it's like, we also know that, this could end tomorrow.
Once you started to tour, did you enjoy that experience initially? Or again, was that something that you kind of learned to enjoy over time, or did you immediately take to it?
Well, just being able to get out and go someplace and get out of town was exciting enough. I don't even know if we considered it to be touring at the time. Early on, we would go to town. We would go to Canada and play with these dudes that we knew up in Calgary and do a bunch of shows across Canada early on. It was fun, but it was also roughing it as far as like places that we stayed at and just being, you know, young and a teenager and out having fun without your parents, I guess. I don't know.
So you did enjoy
it. Sure. Yeah.
Right. It's like you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had some pretty crazy experiences on our first tour. You know, we did this tour sort of across, well, at least going down south and going to the southern states of the United States and then up the East Coast, on a tour where nobody really knew who we were and nobody really liked us. It was totally like hand to mouth as far as like making money and touring in a van that broke down every 10 miles. So that was fun, but not so fun.
Of course. Yeah. Right.
It was like our total on the road moment, Jack Kerouac, you know, like bummered across the U.S., you know.
Absolutely. You
know, maybe a slight step higher than hitching it all the way around the U.S. and just like bumming around, basically. Some kids do, you know, when they get out of high school or graduate college, they go and backpack across Europe, you know, like you know. We bummed it around the U.S. in some shit van trying to get shows and people to like us. So our only 7-inch that we had out.
Of course. Right. Yeah. This was, you just elongated your gap year, as they say, and you're just still doing it now.
Right. Yeah. It sucked at first. I mean, we vowed to never tour again after that tour. You know, it was fun, but there was a lot of bummer times but still we got our best stories come from that tour, I think.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
So I guess as you started to do this and, you know, maybe a few people started to show up at shows and there was some attention being paid to you guys, how did the interaction of, you know, I guess commerce and the business side of music, I know you guys have always had a, somewhat adversarial relationship to that side of the coin, as it were. Did you, I guess, care to participate in that at all, or is that just something that was, you know,
in the business side of things?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, we've always watched every dollar,
sure,
and not left it in somebody else's hands. You know, I think we've been realistic about that stuff from the get go.
But do you enjoy? I mean, like, do you enjoy the business of it, or is it just like, well, we got to deal with this, so of course, like, we're going to do that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean,
Sure. Yeah, you're like, we tolerate it. It's fine.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, we got our heavies behind us.
Right. You got people working for you. Sure.
You know, but ultimately, you know, yeah, if we weren't making a living off of doing this at this point, we wouldn't do it. Why? You know, I mean, we'd be weekend warriors, I guess.
And kind of along that same lines, you know, as you guys started to, you know, entertain these, you know, record deals, like obviously with, you know, Atlantic, and like once grunge obviously exploded and every label was trying to figure out, you know, what they needed to do with that. You know, and this may be kind of an interesting way to put this question, but just like, when did you kind of notice it being comical? And what I mean by that is like, oh my gosh, like, this has gone completely out of control. Like, why are these labels even talking to us? Like, this is ridiculous. I mean, like, we're going to talk to them because it's funny. Like, you know, we're going to entertain these meetings or whatever, you know, but when did it feel, I guess, larger than life in a way that you were just like, oh my gosh, this is, why are people even paying attention on this level to what, you know, the Melvins are doing or whatever? Or did it ever get that way?
Comical? Not really. But I mean, as far as this understanding why, I mean, obviously why was because of the Nirvana guys, you know, and labels seeing this whole new musical explosion happening and signing anything that might make them some money. But you know, on the other hand, for us, with our deal, in Atlantic, they always seemed realistic about their expectations, at least when we first signed, you know, and that's why we went with them too. They weren't like, you know, thinking like, you guys are going to like sell a million records and it's going to be great and we're going to have all the success. And, you know, it was more like, okay, we guys know that you're already established and, you know, obviously you guys are friends with these guys, you know, we'll give you this much money to make whatever kind of record you want to. And, you know, also, by us signing you guys, it'll make us look hip. You know, we'll be realistic about this whole thing. And if this relationship works out, you guys will always be able to be on this label and make records for your whole career. You know, that's what attracted us to Atlantic. And that's coming from the vice president, who wasn't there after a year and a half or so. So, you know, I mean, we signed a fucking great deal. You know, we signed a deal that if we would have still been there, you know, we would have been making records with them. We could still be making records with them. They could still have us if you know. But you know, the turnover of employees there, I mean, we outlasted like everybody that was there when we signed with them. So we made up pretty good, and we did three records with them, and I'm happy with all those records, you know. And then we went and signed with somebody else where we could do the exact same thing that was going to happen with Atlantic, and we're still there. Funny enough.
Well, and I think it's really you know, important to highlight the fact that it's like the core idea of obviously what you guys were trying to accomplish with your, you know, music and your art was intact for all, like you said, all of the relationships that you've had with labels. It's like they've, you know, relatively left you guys alone and let you, you know, hatch your harebrained schemes and be able to put it out in the world in a positive way. And I think that, you know, like that's the dream, and you guys have been able to accomplish that in so many different aspects. So it's cool.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Thank you for realizing that.
Hey, you know what? Someone's got to tell you guys you're good occasionally. I'm just kidding. So, you know, as you started to pursue the, you know, the band life and, you know, be a part of that. You know, how are your parents reacting to, it's like, wow, our son Dale, I guess, is in like a rock band. Like, you know, were they coming to shows? Were they, you know, sort of cheering you on from the sidelines? What was their interaction with this nomadic lifestyle you were living?
Yeah, eventually they came and saw the band play. It was after I moved away. But, you know, they didn't really need to come and see me play when I lived there because they got their own free concert every night.
Right. Totally. You're like, you guys have already heard these songs. You don't need to
right.
be here.
And of course, at that point, I wouldn't have wanted my parents to come to the show. Not them. You know?
No.
But then after I moved away and came back, then, yeah, you know, it was great. It was great having them come. And yes, they were very proud.
The fact that, you know, you guys as the Melvins have been able to do so many different creative things and stuff that has really challenged your fan base to, you know, follow along with what you guys are doing. Is it fun to kind of try to find those limits in which people, I guess, do follow you?
Yeah, sure. Especially doing artwork. I mean, you know, especially in the last, I don't know, 20 years we've been in control of all that stuff, and have you know things have changed so much, you know, like as far as selling music goes, you know, back when we were on Atlantic, like they used to give away pretty much as many promo copies as what we could sell nowadays. You know, so that's why we do those things, like that's why we do like a lot of limited edition artwork things, and it's taken more control of that stuff, you know. But yeah, I mean, it's like a whole nother world that something that we can do, you know.
Sure. And then musically, I'm sure it's also fun to explore the I wouldn't even say the limits of what you guys can do, but just what people will support from you guys without you saying, hey, we don't like this band anymore, you know?
Right. I guess, well, we've never worried about that stuff, even from the beginning, you know? Cared about what, I mean, we've always tried to make what we thought was cool. You know, we're playing music that we like and would like as fans. And, you know, it's weird and different than anything else, from anybody else, and that's why you should like our band, you know. But we're fans of all kinds of different music, and I think it shows in our stuff. We care, but we don't care. You know, we don't care what you think. You know, we know we're villains. We've always been villains in this. You know, we're the villains of rock and roll.
You're the you like to lean into the heel aspect of the wrestling world, as it were.
Well, we didn't start out to be villains, you know. We weren't meant to be villains. We want people to love us, but I mean, you know, like I said, our band's called the Melvins first and foremost, so you take it from there. But we're definitely the underdogs, I think, and always has been. And yeah,
it's a role you're comfortable with.
Sure.
Your time in, you know, often Red Cross that you still play with, it seems to me a function of you being a dude who kind of like gets it as far as like knowing where both the bands are coming from musically, but then obviously has the, you know, chops to be able to play the stuff. It also feels like the inclusion of you in those bands also definitely mimics the idea of, you know, when bands first start playing, sometimes a drummer is the most difficult person to come by because of all of the obvious reasons. Was your, you know, you being asked to play in both of those bands, did it kind of feel that way where it was like, oh, this is already people I'm familiar with and their art, and now I'm just able to, you know, put my own stuff on there?
Yeah, exactly, for sure. drummers are always in multiple bands because there's not a lot of us. You know, and that's one reason why I decided to play drums, is because, you know, everybody and their brother can play guitar, and everybody and their brother does play guitar. So, you know, drums, you have more opportunity to be in bands because there's way less of us. But, yeah, I mean, I've always approached both those bands with my own style, but also exactly knowing where they're coming from, what their style is, and what drumming style they're looking for. You know, with Red Cross, it's like a combination of Ringo, Charlie, with a little a big pinch of Keith thrown in, and you know, with Off, they're more of a Black Flag early '80s style hardcore. You know,
the last thing I want to hit on was you know, you obviously, you know, having a family and, you know, having all of these things that, you know, quote unquote, normal people do, you know, how does your, how do your kids react to, like, you know, you being in a band and your art and everything like that? Is it one of those things where, like most kids, they think the stuff that their parents do is the uncoolest thing possible, or how do they interact with that?
Well, they've grown up with it, and, I don't know. You like my band?
Yeah.
Okay, my daughter says yes, so
that's good.
I think she digs it. I mean, they're cool with it. They think it's cool, right? Dad's cool, right?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. You hear that?
Yeah.
All right.
For just further validation, dad's cool. 16-year-old
who's working on a looks like a green tea shake wearing a bikini kill shirt. So there you go.
That they could definitely have turned out worse. That's for sure.
I did okay. Did okay from a country bumpkin coming from Aberdeen, Washington. There's a great meme going around of my hometown where it says, 10,000 meth heads and counting. Don't feed the meth heads.
Well, Dale, thanks for shoveling through the technical glitches. But yeah, I appreciate you hanging out.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, that was Dale, and it was fun. Like I said, even though we went through some technological glitches, that was not his fault, that was the internet's fault, it was still a fun chat nonetheless, and thank you very much to Monica's publicist, and yeah, you need to check out all the Melvin stuff. You should also probably check out, Off and Red Cross if you are missing some great punk bands that should be part of your vernacular. But anyways, we are talking about next week. We've got Brian Cook, who is the bassist from Russian Circles. He also played in Botch, just recently released a solo record called Torment and Glory. And he's also played in bands like Roy. And I love what Brian does. And I've wanted to have this conversation with him for a while. So we were able to accomplish that. That's what we got next week. So until then, please be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.